Hey folks, welcome back to this week's episode of Zen Founder. The last 4 or 5 weeks, we have been focusing on mental health pretty heavily. We've interviewed a couple of folks about their experiences with depression, Jacob Holman and Rand Fishkin. And then my friend Kim talked about her experience of losing her entrepreneur husband in a tragic suicide. So we have wanted to, again, bring this conversation about mental health and the founder community kind of freshly into your ears and into your inboxes, because we think it's so important to continue to raise awareness around these topics. So I am here today with Dale Bertrand, and he has been a great listener, and that he's someone who has written in a couple of times giving us suggestions for podcast topics. And he suggested a couple times that we talk about how to help someone around us who is struggling with depression or burnout or just struggling. So whether he liked it or not, I said, okay, Dale, why don't you come on and we'll talk about it together. So I'm super glad that he was up for that. Dale is a Boston-based entrepreneur. He has kind of a background as a software guy, but has transitioned into digital marketing and runs a digital marketing agency and is talking to me from the MIT campus, which is where his office is.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
So thanks for joining me, Dale.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm glad that you responded when I emailed in.
Of course. And I think it's such a great question, right? Because we talk about how to notice whether it's within ourselves or people around us that seem to be struggling. But that, of course, begs the question of what do we do when we notice other people around us that are having a hard time? Do you want to say a little bit about why this has been a pressing question for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I wrote in just to ask you the question around how to help friends of mine, just because I've had a few friends who've really been struggling. And for me, in my position, just trying to figure out how to help them, what I should be doing. I've got my own ideas, obviously, about what change they might want to make in their life, but you know, I can't impose that on them. So it can definitely be tricky.
Yeah, I think it is hard for a lot of us when we see someone around us having a hard time to know how our instincts about what's helpful match with their experience of what's helpful to them. And I think that the magic is when we can help them in a way that sort of flows from who we are, but really matches what they need.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, my experience has been, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not a trained professional. I don't know what they really need, but, you know, I do have opinions, and I'm always second guessing whether my opinions are even helpful or should be expressed.
Are there certain kind of go-tos that you have in your head? So you have a friend who is having a hard time, maybe has recently lost a job or changed positions or had some sort of upheaval happen in their life. What's your kind of first instinct about how to be helpful to them?
So for me, the way I'd want to help is really the way I would want to be helped. That's really my only frame of reference. For me, I'm the type of person where anytime something's going on, I want to talk to as many people as possible. You know, I'm very open about things, especially when, you know, not so good things are going on with me. So my go-to for a friend would be, you know, obviously they want to talk about it, or they, you know, they want somebody to ask probing questions, and they want to spend time, maybe linger over a dinner or a phone call or something like that. So that's really the first type of help that I would want to offer if I knew somebody was dealing with an issue.
And I think that works well in a lot of situations, especially when someone has a problem that they need to solve, or they're seeking direction, or they have like a question that they're really thinking through, like, should I take this path? Should I take this job? Should I try this startup? Those are the kinds of things where I think really those sort of long in-depth, like, I'm listening, I'm showing up for you, I'm using my brain as best I can to support you. That kind of help is really useful. Have there been times when you've wanted to show up for someone that way and they found that to not be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there was a time I could think of with a friend who just didn't want to talk about it. And I think that was really frustrating for me because she was really going through a tough time. So basically a loss of a parent. And, you know, I felt awful for her. I knew she felt awful. And I just knew she needed to talk about it, or at least that's what I thought. And I,
that's what it felt like to you.
Yeah. That's what it felt like to me, was that she needed to talk about it and not bottle it up and try to ignore it, since it was the most traumatic thing that had happened to her in her life. And I was pretty frustrated that she just wanted to ignore it and not talk about it. And at the same time, it might not be my place to force her to talk about it, obviously, if that's not the way that she's really processing it.
Yeah. I relate to that example. I think as a psychologist, right, my go-to is to be a listener, to invite people to tell their stories, to invite people to talk about the things that are really painful to them. And interestingly, in my training, specifically in trauma, in really bad, like life-threatening things happen, some of the recent research has indicated that it's maybe not even necessary to talk about the event to help people heal, which, you know, I sort of found like, oh, that's really interesting, you know, in my life as a psychologist. But I think it's a good thing to know for people who want to be helpful to someone else who's having a hard time, is that sometimes talking about the painful thing isn't the most helpful. It might not even be that necessary to someone healing or feeling better. So it sounds like your friend had that response, and that was kind of a surprise to you and left you wondering like, huh, well, how do I help then?
Yeah. I mean, it left me without any other options that would really come to mind in terms of how I could help. I mean, I actually thought about sending her a book that I read when my mother passed away. And I thought that could be, I mean, I thought it could be helpful to her because it was helpful to me, but I certainly didn't want to input. I feel like when you send somebody a book, they feel obligated to read it, and that might not have been the best thing. So thinking back on it, maybe there could have been a way that I could have suggested some of the resources that really helped me when I was going through something similar, and then just kind of told her about those resources without any expectation or feeling like I'm burdening her.
Yeah. I think some problems are solved with information, right? With insight or new thoughts or perspective. But most problems, I think, that fall under the umbrella of what we're talking about are problems not so much of resources and thoughts as much as they're problems of emotion. And often it's the way that we can be helpful is to try to contribute to someone having a different feeling, a different experience of feeling. Does that make sense, or does that sound sort of mushy?
Yeah, I mean, I think with this particular friend, we happen to live far apart, so we don't see each other very often. But I could imagine a relationship where, you know, we do get together more often, and I could probably be more perceptive in terms of what they need or how they're processing, or give them a number of different openings to maybe talk about it so I can understand what's going on with them.
Yeah. I think one of the best ways that we can help people who are having a hard time, but maybe aren't in a place where they want to talk about it, or, you know, as somebody who's really, really depressed, sometimes they are like really in a morass and feel like they can't even talk, like they're sort of slowed down and not able to talk very much. So how do you, like, I think that what's indicated then is that we communicate that we care in other ways. So sometimes that can mean like practical help, So showing up at someone's house, if you live nearby, and doing their dishes for them, or shoveling their snow-filled driveway, or raking their leaves, or just doing something that you can see might need to be done and might just ease a little bit of burden. So providing some kind of practical help, certainly bringing meals falls in that category. And I think depression or like mental health challenges are a little bit trickier because, you know, traditionally, if you have an injury or you're recovering from surgery, maybe your friends might organize some meals for you. Or if you have a baby, they bring you meals. But depression doesn't show up that way. And so there's often not the kind of organization around someone who's suffering where their friends say, hey, this person's having a hard time, let's bring them some real meals. But there's no reason it shouldn't be like that. You know, if you know that someone is having a hard time, to say, hey, I'm gonna send you some pizza on Friday night, or I'm gonna send you a gift card, or I'm going to do something where I can just help nourish you, even literally, to help you know that I care about you.
No, I like the way you're thinking about it in terms of just let them know they're loved and somebody cares about them. I think I've had other situations where I feel like somebody I know needs professional help. And I might not even be qualified to make that determination. But in a situation like that, yeah, of course I can. Maybe information is helpful to them. Maybe just letting them know that somebody cares for them is helpful to them. But I still feel like I need to somehow get this person the help they need.
Yeah. And in those cases, I think honesty is the best policy. Those statements like, I'm worried about you, or I feel like you're not yourself, or I'm concerned, I would like to help you get connected to somebody who can be helpful to you. You know, I think when we try to game it too much, that's when we lose trust. But when we're just honest about like, I'm worried, I want to help, I'm not sure I know how, can we call someone? Those can be helpful moments.
I see. And then I've had, maybe it's because my friends tend to be entrepreneurs, but I tend to know some pretty stubborn people, or at least I would call them stubborn. So I think I have had in the past a conversation like that, where I'm talking to a friend about the type of help that might be appropriate for what they're going through. And this person is what I would call stubborn, you know, like I don't need help, or just basically I'm thinking of one friend in particular who wouldn't really be interested in doing much unless he thought it was his idea, so to speak. So
I love entrepreneurs, don't you?
So that can be really tough. You know, it could be really tough watching somebody make the same mistake over and over again. Yeah, maybe they just don't want help, or they're not ready for it.
And that's a reality. And that happens sometimes. That happens sometimes even when people get into professional help. I've had people come to me and basically spend hours and hours trying to convince me that there's no hope for them. And, you know, if that's the narrative that they have, it's not an intellectual or cognitive persuasion that will change that. It's some kind of new experience. So I guess all that to say, if you are being open with someone about your concern for them and you're working to help them break down barriers. I mean, sometimes people who need professional help, like, don't know who to call. So if you can sit with them and like look at some therapist profiles or help them do some research and say, hey, I came across these three people. Do any of these look interesting to you? That can help break down a barrier. It can help break down a barrier if you sit with them while they make the first phone call or leave the first message. But if you're willing to, you know, help problem solve and be honest and open and say, hey, I think this would be helpful, but they're still really not willing to take you up on it, or maybe it's not the right time, then as helpers, we have to be okay with that too. And we have to be okay with saying, I did my best to offer what I can, and then, you know, respect people's choices, even if we don't like them.
So I know a couple of people I would consider acquaintances who I think are dealing with issues. And these are people that I would like to help, but I wouldn't want to get too close, if you know what I mean.
You don't want to go in too deep.
Especially with someone that I don't have that foundation. of like a deep personal relationship. So this isn't somebody I've known for 20 years. It's really more of an acquaintance that I work with in the same office.
Yeah.
So that can be tough because I don't have that platform, that relationship to lean on. And then also, I'm not sure if I even want to go there with this particular person, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that there's a way that we can show up in our lives where we're talking about how to stay mentally healthy or how to take care of ourselves in very like broad ways, where it's not you going to someone and saying like, hey, I've observed you look a little mopey lately. Have you ever thought of therapy? I mean, that might not be appropriate with someone you don't have a relationship with. It's probably not appropriate. But for you to use those I statements to say, well, I'm so glad that I'm reading this book about how to sleep well, or it's been really helpful for me to be in therapy, and just kind of make that part of your lived experience and the way that you show up, even with your acquaintances. And I know that's, you know, that's some personal disclosure on your part, but it does make it normative. And it also like creates a narrative of like, this is just how I am in the world, where I am attending to my own well-being, and I'm doing that carefully and intentionally, and I'm willing to talk about it. It gives other people permission to do the same.
Yeah. So here's where that gets hard. So I have 6 to 8 employees, depending on how you count, with contractors and interns. And when it's somebody who works for me, then things get really sticky for a lot of reasons. Like there might be legal reasons. I might be making that up. The truth is, I don't know. And then the other thing is personal disclosure to somebody who works with you can be tricky.
Which is why I think if you sort of choose a level of public/personal disclosure where it's not particularly personal, your disclosure to that one person, but it's just known that you as a business owner are thinking about and taking mental health topics seriously. So maybe that's doing preventative things. So you have a psychologist come in and talk about how to focus well and work well. And you have that little seminar for your employees, or you have someone come in and talk about the benefits of sleeping and eating for mental health. So again, it doesn't have to be like, I, Dale, am talking to my employee, Susan, about my depression in a way that feels overly familiar or overly intimate or, you know, like not right for the workplace. But it just becomes part of the culture of the workplace to have kind of a, not open conversation, but like a preventative conversation about mental health kinds of topics. Does that make sense or kind of?
That does make sense because it makes it sound more like an ongoing conversation as opposed to, you know, you don't look right today, what's going on? And me thinking, well, maybe that's none of my business.
Yeah, I think we all have to be discerning about how much we get in touch with people about how they're doing. But I do think that we can create cultures on our teams and in our places of business where we are proactive about self-care and mental health conversations, like before they become a problem.
Yeah, I see. So yeah, I mean, for me, my perspective is really, you know, I'm a friend and a coworker, and for some people I'm their manager, and I'm not a therapist. So I spend a lot of my time wondering if it's any of my business, if I could help, and if it's even appropriate and what I should do.
I think that clarity about your role is important. I also think that sometimes when people are having a hard time at home, it feels good to be able to go to work and do something different, put your brain in a different spot. And to give people space to not talk about it is also really important. You know, you're right, you're not a therapist. Like, you probably don't want the detailed story about someone's breakup. Sometimes it's helpful to know they're in the middle of a breakup and things are in transition for them, but not necessarily to play confidant and counselor. And that's not what you should be doing as someone's manager or someone's boss. It's kind of overcaring in a way that's potentially unhealthy to you and to them. And I think that's actually really important when we talk about helping, is to like have boundaries around yourself as a helper, like being mindful about not treading too deeply into someone's personal life, but always sort of communicating a sense of warmth and that you care about people.
Yeah. And the last thing you'd want to do, especially in a workplace, is make people feel like anything they disclose is going to affect their job adversely, or, you know, this might get to their boss, or I am their boss, or something like that.
Yeah, I think it can be helpful. People have different opinions about this, and companies have different cultures about this, but my perspective is it's helpful to have some significant separateness between home life and work life. Knowing that they are going to interrelate, they're going to affect each other, but letting them be separate so that people can, not have to rehash the details of their home life when they're at work, and vice versa.
Yeah, I like that too. I think, I worked for a large company for a while where they basically had a mental health line, and that's pretty much how they dealt with personal issues. They say, hey, well, we have an 800 number. Why don't you call that? And then I've worked in another environment, a startup I worked for maybe like 10 years ago, where the founder had her own struggles. So what she talked about a lot is that work life and your personal life are intertwined whether you like it or not. So we don't want to build a culture where you have to pretend like they're separate in cases that they're not. And there has to be a happy medium between, having to leave home at home and pretend like everything's okay at home all the time when you're at work, and then also the other extreme where people at work are asking you for the intimate details of things that are just not appropriate, really, for you to feel like you have to disclose or talk about or have your employer get involved in.
Yeah, intimate details is probably the line. Like, you don't want to go there at work. You don't want to go there as a manager. I do think that we can create, those of us who are owning businesses, run businesses, are in leadership, are managers, we can create policies that are humane, right? We can have mental health days, or we can be flexible with people coming in late if they're having a childcare problem, or we want to make life work well for the people that work with us and for us, because as you say, we're not separate entities. There's overlap between how things are going at home and how things are going at work. But that said, I think it's much easier to create a culture of prevention than it is to try to have deep level intervention with someone who works for you. But if this is something that's important to you, it makes sense to develop a relationship with a couple of therapists in your community and just get to know them so that you know that, hey, I have this person that I trust that I've met, and they're a resource if you feel like that's important. So you can give that kind of personal referral to people that you know because you've cultivated a relationship with someone that you trust that's a mental health professional.
And then what would the culture of prevention look like? I mean, I assume that's more than, casual Friday or, beer at 5 o'clock or something like that.
Yeah, I think jeans and beer are only peripherally related to mental health. But I think the culture of prevention looks like talking, like giving good information about burnout prevention, about what depression looks like and how to spot it early, about helpful strategies to manage stress and anxiety, about having clear boundaries around who needs to be on Slack at what time, making sure that your employees aren't overly burdened by feeling like, they need to be on all the time. Basically, like being a really good manager is a really good mental health intervention. But the more that we talk openly about, hey, burnout is a danger, let's make sure that we are working smart and well and not just, trying to fry ourselves by having really unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, as a manager, there are a number of people that I work with who are at times they're working in an unsustainable fashion. And I can see that, and it might be necessary for a short period of time, but I'm eager to end it, so to speak, or to get back to a more sustainable pace because I don't want to lose anybody to burnout.
And I think that's a great conversation to have with people that's not overly intrusive. That's a work problem for you to say, hey, I know you're working on this project. I see you busting your butt, and I know that you're putting in long hours. Let's make sure that that's a time-limited thing because I don't want this to go on into 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks of you working at this pace because, like you say, I don't want you to burn out. I don't want to lose you. I want you to be healthy and happy in your work.
Yeah, and then sometimes the work is more chaotic than others. And what I mean by that is, we all enjoy having, knowing what needs to get done. in a given day and actually being able to get it done and feel good about it. Sometimes we don't have that luxury, and it's another source of volatility and stress that I'm trying to minimize.
Yeah, and I think that's super insightful. We know a lot about the causes of burnout, and having unclear goals is one of the sort of six predictors of burnout. Not being able to celebrate successes is another one. Having too much work, not having meaningful relationships. These are some of the things that once we as leaders know that's what tends to fry people, we can do quite a bit about preventing that from being the day-to-day lived experience for our organizations. Or for our teams, I should say. Organizations aren't so corporate for our teams.
Yeah, well, I love the way I'm learning something here about corporate culture and management in general. I'm not sure I expected the conversation to go in that direction, but that's useful to me. That's useful to other people too.
Well, let's rein it back in maybe to those things that help us show up for people who are having a hard time. We've talked a little bit about the importance of being open to having conversations, providing practical help, whether that's meals or, you know, just trying to figure out how we can make people's lives easier when they're going through a hard time. We've talked about talking with people about therapy or getting extra help, how we can break down some of the barriers, do a little bit of research, get some phone numbers, help make that an easier process. And I think one of the things that I might add is just expressions of care, whether that's making sure that you're texting someone every couple of days who's having a hard time, sending cards, sending flowers, those little reminders of ways that you can pop into someone's life and remind them that you care about them and you're thinking about them, even though you can't do very much to solve the problem or maybe you're not around to provide practical help.
Yeah, all of that is good. I really like the idea of showing someone that you care instead of how to solve their problem with information, which is the way that I usually think.
And there's certainly a place for that. And I think one of the things that is helpful is to ask, to say, would it be helpful for me to sit with you and try to talk through this problem or talk about what your choices are or how you're thinking about this? Or do not want to talk, and can I instead just bring you a pizza and sit by you while we watch a movie? And I think that gives people the choice, which can be important. Often people who are having a hard time are having a hard time because their choices have been taken from them, whether that's through a tragic loss or it feels like their body's going haywire. So the more that we in our helping can help people return to a sense of choice and agency, that actually in itself is kind of restorative. It helps people feel like they have control again. So any last questions or thoughts or ways we can problem solve how to show up for someone who's having a hard time?
No, I mean, that all sounds good. I think it makes sense and I learned something. So I appreciate the answers and inviting me on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for coming. I've sort of like known you online, so it's fun to finally talk and get a sense of who you are and how you're thinking about your work. And yeah, thank you for writing in. And I think this conversation is such a relevant one for really all of us. So I appreciate you taking the time to be part of the conversation.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
So that is a wrap for this episode of Zen Founder. Of course, we are still excited about our recent book launch. So if you have had a chance to pick up the book, thank you. That's fantastic. And if you have a chance to go back to Amazon and give it a review, that is also super helpful to us in terms of getting the word out. And if you haven't had a chance to pick up the book, hey, please do. We worked hard to make it interesting and useful. So we're hoping that people who are listening to the podcast will get a lot of benefit from it. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.